In this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, I spend a lot of time looking at extraordinary cars and trying to describe them to you. Now, I'm going to attempt to publish as many photographs as I can of the cars I'm talking about in this episode to the webpage for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, and I'll also publish them to my Threads account. So if you want to see them, you have to follow me on Threads. My Threads ID is Gareth Jones TV. Right, now you've done that, here's a show all the way from Munich. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth and willkommen im München. I think that's right. Welcome to Munich. I'm in Bavaria in a hotel at the moment called the Amaron in an area of Munich known as Motor World. It's, you know, some kind of engineering centre, some kind of theme park, but a car-themed place in Munich, and I'm going to go and explore that in a minute. Can you hear? Listen, there's a sound I want you to hear. Hold on. Can you hear that gurgling? Listen again. I'm in a fantastic hotel room with a fantastically noisy air conditioning unit. I'm sure I'll be able to sleep through that. But hey, let me tell you about this room. I know this programme isn't about hotel rooms, but it's a super car-themed hotel. So I think it's worth a mention. The mirror over the bed is a steering wheel. And directly opposite, there is a mural. There is a picture of a car, a Formula One car, from about, what, 1966, maybe, on the wall. A massive black and white picture that is, oh God, 12 or 15 foot across, takes up most of the room, and it is of Jackie Stewart, I think driving a Matra MS80, I think it is, probably around the British Grand Prix, because there is a BP sign blurred behind it. Big black and white blurry photo, wonderful. And the only way you can tell it's Jackie Stewart is that there is a band of tartan across the top of his helmet, of course. And the only reason I say this is that I'd be able to see this absolutely magnificent mural of Jackie Stewart if it wasn't for the 55-inch flat screen TV, which is obscuring at least 50% of this picture. Yeah, but hang on, I can look around the back of the TV. Yeah, that's Jackie. That's Jackie. So that's it. That's the start of the car theme here. I'm going to go and explore the hotel. I thought you might like to come with me, because downstairs I can see a row of motorbikes through my window, and what looks like a Formula 3 car hanging upside down on the mezzanine floor, as well as a row of cars I can see. Ooh, I think two Ferraris and probably an Alfa Romeo. Ferrari from the 80s, the 60s, and probably something from the 50s as well. Right, better get down there. I think you probably should find out what these are. I've come downstairs into Motor World to try and work out what this place is where the car design event happens, and it's difficult to describe. It's clearly some kind of old factory. I don't know if it was a car factory historically, because of course Munich is the home of BMW and Pininfarina Auto. Yeah, the auto, what do they call it? Automobili Pininfarina, the car manufacturing side of Pininfarina are based here, not in Turin like the design company. But those three cars I could just see out of the window of my hotel room overlooking this huge expanse, those three cars are a Ferrari 612 in black. Yeah, like a front-engine Ferrari. Nice. A Maserati Mistral from 64 or thereabouts, if I remember, in an amazing kind of metallic, what we could call that, somewhere between grey and brown, but elegance personified. Who designed the Mistral? Was it Gandini? Was it one of his cars? I can't remember. And that third car, which I thought may have been an early Alfa Romeo, I was close, but no biscuit. It's actually a Fiat. It's the, what do they call it? The Tipo 508. I don't know how you say that in Italian. The Balilla 508. A little two-seater roadster with open wheels and mudguards and just motorsport right the way through it. But this place is interesting. It's a bit like a shopping mall in terms of vibe. Big open place, music playing in the distance. But it's full of car dealerships and motorcycle dealerships. There's a Triumph dealership here. Blochl are here, who sell a range of incredible cars, really. I'm just looking in their window. I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 Ferraris, ranging from a... gosh, I used to know the names of Ferraris. I just don't, or the numbers anymore. My brain is failing me. But yeah, suffice to say, there's a lot of Ferraris. Some sort of 90s Ferraris as well. Some 21st century. There's an F355 Spider here. That's a classic, isn't it? And what's that, a 328, 348, isn't it? Yeah, 348 Challenge. And... oh yes, a 488 Spider. Cool. They're all in red, of course, Ferraris. Right, what else have we got here? More Ferraris. Everywhere you look on either side of this pedestrian way, there's a McLaren dealership here as well, and a Bugatti Veyron in the shiniest black paint I have ever seen. The Veyron, good bit of design. It's, you know, I know it's a big car, big engine, but there's something very compact about it. When you look at it compared to the McLaren sitting behind it, it looks, yeah, it looks about right. Looks like a black ladybug, like a beetle. Ladybug, sorry, ladybird. That was very American of me. And if cute is what you want from your cars, there's a row of Fiat 500 Nuovos. Yeah, not the Topolino, the Nuovo from the 60s in a range of colours. All lovely and cute. My friend Gia had one of those. We used to drive around London in it. It is the perfect city car. There's a display, there's a wide concourse with mezzanine floors all around it, and sat right in the middle of it is a Mercedes One. Yeah, I think it's the first time I've seen one in the flesh, and the standout feature to me is over the front wheel arches, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 on either side opening vents, which are clearly motorized, which allow for different aerodynamics, different cooling exiting the front wheels. But it's not a dramatic looking car. It's handsome, and yeah, I wouldn't turn one down. Oh my gosh, there are two of them. Really? Ugh, you wait forever to see a Mercedes One, and there it is. Yeah, fascinating. Another Veyron, this one in two colours, like Veyrons perhaps should be, and if Zog was with me right now, he would go nuts for the Porsche 911 Dakar thing that they did a few years ago, where they pumped up the 911 and gave it kind of Dakar treatment. Nice, yeah. That's it. That, Zog would have that, even over the Bugatti, which I know he loves. Ooh. Okay, I'm going to have to research this. What's this? It is a Speedster to Mercedes Speedster, the Speed Legend, I think it's called, which is a version of the Mercedes GT. Yeah, you know, it's a Speedster. It's got no windscreen. I nearly said windshield. What's the matter with me? I'm talking American today. Yeah, that does it. What else have we got here? Not another one. Yeah. Oh, no, this is an Aston Martin Speedster. Wow. It's all here, isn't it? Everything. What else we got? I turn around. Behind me is... Do you know, I can't even guess what that is. It's not a Bentley, is it? It's a huge SUV. I can't read the thing. I'm going in. It's got a B on it, but it's not a Bentley. It's one of those tuners, isn't it, that take an existing vehicle and completely rebuild it. Oh, it's a Brabus, of course. It's a BMW under there. Of course it is. It's a Brabus. That's the B. What else have we got? Rimac. Oh, yeah. I've learned how to say it properly, by the way. It's not Rimac, it's Rimac. Although there doesn't seem to be a Rimac car in there. It says Rimac over the door, and the car in there is a Lamborghini. Another one for Zogger. There's a Porsche 956, or 356, sorry, 356, on the back of a VW Combi tray. Well, what do you call it? Flatbed. Nice, beautiful wooden flatbed. Again, Zog would love that. I should have brought him with me. Sorry, Zogger. Sorry. And... Ah, right now, this is interesting. I'm standing in front of one of those Stackham High garages, you know, where there's a rotating floor, a bit like a food dispensing thing. You know what I mean by that? You know, with every floor is like a... And he said, elevator, what's the matter with me? A lift moving cars around. And I'm just going to walk past here and mention some of the cars. There's an incredible 911 GT3 RS. There's a blacked out Jeep. I don't know what that is, but that looks like it could kill even large children very easily. Terrifying. Another Porsche 911, another Aston Martin, you get the vibe. And then there's an Alpine dealership. They've got the A290 in there, which is a curious name for a car, isn't it? I know it's the Renault 5 underneath, but why A290? How did they come up with that number? And it's parked alongside an Alpine A110 Arturini, which is probably the one to have. Although, to be honest, any of the Alpine road cars are good. Ask Alex Goy. He's driven most of them. I've only driven one, but they're all good. And parked alongside the two Alpines, explain this, a Rolls-Royce Cullinan. And all these cars are fenced off with, you know, those... what do you call those sort of belts that they put on fences? And all the cars are tucked in behind it, apart from the Cullinan, which is up against the belt, tight against the belt. It's so big in white. Compared to any car, it's big. Park it next to an Alpine 290 and it looks like a truck. Because I think Rolls-Royce can probably claim the world's fastest truck title from Bentley these days. If you were going to choose between a Cullinan and a Bentayga, which one would you have? Choose now. I might go for the Cullinan. I don't know why I said that. Ah. Microlino. I'm not going to say Microlino. Microlino. We've talked about this car on the programme a few years ago. Nice to see it in the flesh. It is a 21st century Isetta bubble car. Exactly the same layout, with the door at the front that opens up, allowing you access. How does that work in crash protection, eh? But the Microlino is gorgeous. There's one in a kind of a satin black, and there are orange ones and red ones. I hope they're doing well. It's a great idea. Very bold to bring back the bubble car, isn't it? Very bold. yeah, that stacking thing, that sort of food delivery thing I was talking about. On the first level, I mentioned the GT3 RS. And on the second level, Lamborghinis, Alfa Romeo 8C, and McLaren, don't know which one that is. I can't tell any McLarens apart these days. Can you? There's a Lamborghini Urus here, an Aston Martin, what's that, Vantage Volante, and a Vantage F1 edition. I think Alex drove that, didn't he? Yeah, I'd like that. Good luck to Aston Martin, cashing in on their F1 relationship. Very important, very, very important. Do it. It helps sell cars, right? Everywhere you look, there's cars in satin colours. There's another Lamborghini. What's that? The Huracan? It's in a delightful damson, I'm going to call it. Violet, my partner for 28 years, always says, I've never known a man be able to describe colours in detail like you. Yeah, it's damson. You know what I mean by that? But it's a kind of a silk, semi-matte damson. Man, I'm spoilt for choice here. I wish you were here with me. I hope me describing these cars is whetting your appetite. And so I know you're not here looking at them, but I hope you can visualise them. Oh my gosh, there's the new terrifying Bugatti with a name I can't remember. Chiron? Is that what it's called? Chiron? That's right. Right, what else have we got? A McLaren dealership with all the McLarens and a row of them parked outside. This is like going to Le Mans, this is. It really is. You get everything here. How many McLarens? 1, 2, 3. Ooh, that one's in a rather insipid green. Ouch. 3, 4. Oh, nice. Proper turquoise. That is proper turquoise. That is the sort of McLaren that you see driving round Kensington in London. That colour. It's a 750S, by the way. That colour, yeah, that would only really work in California or Dubai. Anywhere else, people might say, it's a bit gauche. However, the matte or silk McLaren, is this a 630 again? No, this is a 720S. Again, woof, 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 woof. And turn around, and there are two orange, what do they call it, the 650? 675, oh, it's a long tail, the LT Spider. Yeah, I guess this is where wealthy Germany comes to pick which ultra mega supercar it wants. I'm walking down a boulevard of McLarens. I've never seen so many McLarens together. This is astonishing. I know it's a dealership, but you wouldn't expect them to have that many cars in stock. There's a Corvette. We call this a C8, isn't it? The C8 Cabrio. Yeah, Corvette's a different car these days. And what's this? A Cadillac Lyric. Lyric spelled L-Y-R-I-Q. All-wheel drive. Yeah, the Cadillac medium SUV. You don't see many of them. Well, you don't see any of those in Britain, do you, right? They sell them in Europe. Just looking at the rear window, there's a hint, only a hint, of Jensen Interceptor about it, which is good. Ooh. Now, you don't see one of these every day, a KTM Crossbow GTXR. You know where they took the Crossbow and put a body on it for once? That's a vicious-looking machine. The whole thing appears to be finished in carbon fibre. Again, that sort of silk matte finish. But you can see the weave of the carbon fibre all over the bonnet and the doors and the roof and everywhere. Nice. Why don't we have patterns on cars? Why can't you buy a Harris Tweed car or a shark skin car or a tartan car? People would go for it, I think. A couple of Fords. Ford GT. That's the later version of the GT. The one that raced at Le Mans just a few years ago. Not the second GT from the 90s, like, what's his name, Clarkson had. No, no, no. This is a proper race car. And, yeah, they won first time out with that car at Le Mans. Well done. Was it really a GT car, or was it really an LMP2 in some ways? No, it wasn't an LMP2, but it was right at the limit of what GT cars were allowed to be at Le Mans. You know, more carbon fibre than, let's say, a stealth fighter manufacturing facility. Do they use carbon fibre in stealth fighters? I don't know. Right, I'm back at another, oh, it's a different one, another one of those car stacking auto garages. You know, they have them in Tokyo, don't they, where space is at such a premium that car parks are effectively lifts. You know, you drive in and it takes your car up to a level and tucks it away in the corner. And what have we got here? BMW Z8, another Ferrari, is that a Scaglietti? A BMW Z1, the one with the drop-down doors. I mean, it's supercar heaven here, isn't it? Absolutely. And a Maserati, what's it called? The, what's the name of the Maserati SUV? The Grecale? What was it called? Grecale? Hang on, going over to have a look. Yeah, Grecale, I think it says. Yeah, love a Mazda. Oh, there's two of them. Oh, well, I'll just have the one. Thank you very much. That was the Grecale Forgoli version, that one. Oh, there's some classic Mercedes on the second level. There's a 350 SL, I think that is. Wowza. I'm kind of breathless here. I've become numb to incredible cars. There's a race M4, BMW Junior Team. Remensberger. Yes, I'll have a Remensberger, please. No cheese. Yeah, it's an intriguing place, this. Never seen anything like it before. Part shopping mall, part car dealership, part theme park. But the reason I'm here is to attend a car design event. A car design event which, forgive me for saying this, has the most Germanic name of anything you could imagine, right? The car design event is called, wait for it, the car design event. It doesn't have a name like Motor Future or Bright Light or, you know, Advance. It's just called the Car Design Event, put together by two people who work in the motor industry. One, I believe, who is a journalist. The other one, I believe, who is a car designer. And the whole purpose of this event is to discuss car design and to launch a few models. So it's like a motor show, but without the crowds. And two of the brands that are going to be launched here are Slate. Yeah, not Slade. Slate. You may have heard about Slate. They are an American startup who are producing... I just got lost. I just realised there's a train station conference room. I'm going to go and explore. I've come upstairs. Sorry, I was getting distracted. Slate is a small, lightweight pickup, EV pickup. It's about the size, I think, of the Chevy LUV, the Chevy Love. So it is a very small, lightweight car. And the most extraordinary thing about this car, the thing that people are talking about, is that it has wind down windows. I got in a Suzuki the other day. A pal of mine's got what's it called? Not the Isis, the Ionis, the Isosocity. You know, that little Suzuki. I had one, can't remember what it's called. And I'm through out to a large area now. And that had wind down windows, certainly in the back. I was thrilled to see that. I love winding down windows in a car. I don't think we need to push a button to get a window down. Why not use a simple lever, a simple handle? It appears to be a conference going on here. Cyber re- resilience across data and identity. And a guy wearing a Mercedes AMG branded t-shirt is lecturing everybody on that. That's interesting. That's something that we might want to talk about on the program at some point in future. How hacking and cyber resilience and security is probably very important if you own a car that is connected these days, and most cars that you buy these days are connected. But connected to who? The right people or the wrong people? Oh, I've just seen a picture on the wall. Michael Schumacher's 94 Benetton in the mild 7 colours, just parked on a street in Germany with graffiti everywhere. That's a great image, great image. Right then, I better go and find the rest of the gang, because shortly I'm going to be introduced to some car designers. Oh, I didn't tell you about the other car launch that's here yet, did I? Apart from Slate, who are launching, Yugo are back. Yeah, the former Yugoslavian car manufacturer, Yugo, think that their name is worth something and they want to start selling cars again. I don't know very much about it other than they're looking for partners at the moment to supply components, perhaps even an entire chassis, to bring back Yugo from the dead. Talking about Stellantis being a possible partner, which historically makes a lot of sense, because of course Yugos were built on old Fiat platforms, weren't they, back in the day? And whilst, you know, some people laugh at the idea of a Yugo, they did incredibly well for a while, particularly in Canada. I think that's where they made most of their money. Canada went for Yugo. Those sensible Canadian people made a sensible choice and chose a nice little economical car. But what is new Yugo, right? What is their USP? What are they going to try and sell their cars on? We will find out, because I'm going to talk to some of the people from Yugo a little bit later on and have a look at a model. They haven't got a whole car here, but they've got a model of the car that they are proposing to build. But here's my final thought on Yugo for the moment, and that is that I'm not sure that the name Yugo is the best name that they could sell that car under. I think they should have called it the Serbo Turbo, because it is a Serbian car, isn't it? I think the Zastava factory was in Serbia, am I right? Which was part of the great Yugoslavia and is now a country in its own right, and has been since the breakup of Yugoslavia, back whenever that happened, when some of you were boys, but I was already a grown man. Right, that's it for your walk around Motor World. Next on the programme, who knows, conversation with the designer, I hope.
Gareth Jones and Speed!
Des Selmayr is one of the organisers of the car design event here in Munich. Thank you for inviting me to your wonderful event. How did it come about? What's the purpose of it?
Well, first of all, I do this together. I do this not alone, but with Jens Meiners, co-founder and co-organiser of the event. Both of us are great fans of iconic car designs, and we've been organising a couple of events together. I'm a member of the Drivers and Business Club here, and I've had an idea to do an event here for a long, long time.
It is the perfect place for this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really nice. It's very intimate. Everybody feels home. It's more like someone's home than a trade fair or motor show.
That is a key difference. I said that earlier on. I think that it's like a motor show, but without all the people getting in the way. It's for journalists and the industry, right?
Correct. Yeah, our target audience is basically three people. It's three audience groups: designers, students, and media.
And the designers themselves that you've got here talking about cars, list me some of the cars and the designers you've got here.
Well, we've got a very broad range this year. We've got from the bottom end of the market, basically, the Slate, which was just introduced in the US 2 weeks ago, the revival of Yugo, and then it goes all the way up through Kia, the EV2, very striking concept car, a hydrogen concept from Hyundai, the ID Everyone from Volkswagen. I think those are the ones that cover the masses. And then we have a few exotics here as well. We've got a Pagani Utopia, a Genesis, which is a beautiful convertible, inside and out, very striking car. Lamborghini brought Vision GT single-seater, and then some performance car also more oriented toward the masses. Affordable performance, I would say, is the Corvette.
And also a concept from 1972, a Munich concept from BMW, which is appropriate. Why is that here?
Yeah, so last year we honored Marcello Gandini here with the Barn Find, the concept car that had been in hiding for almost 40 years, and we reintroduced it here last year. And this year we wanted to honor another designer. This year we're honoring Paul Bruck. So outside on the lawn, outside the club, we have six cars, six iconic Bruck-designed cars on display. And inside the club, the BMW Museum was kind enough to lend us the original BMW Turbo concept that later spawned the BMW M1.
Wow, that's one of the most important concepts in history, you could argue, that car, isn't it? But that's not taking it away from the new stuff that's here as well, and the launch of Slate, and hopefully the return of Yugo, or Zastava, as I prefer to call them. But yeah, loving it, fascinated by the Slate, and very grateful for the opportunity to be here and see the designers explain their cars and get a chance to talk to them. Des, thank you, Al.
Thank you very much.
Oh man, I am loving this event. We've just been on something called the Design Walk, where all the journalists here have been treated to a series of short presentations by designers of some of the concept cars here, such as the Hyundai Obsidian, this extreme wedge of a car. I want to talk to that guy about that. There's a Pagani here, there's a VW kind of electric golf size car concept, there is a Corvette, there are models of the Slate pickup that is being launched here, there's a model of the Yugo, the new Yugo, nice to have Yugo back, loads to talk about. I want to go and tackle some of the designers. Fascinating use of fabrics and inspiration. There's one car here, it's a Genesis, a huge four-seater convertible that is made with some of the most exquisite materials I've ever seen on the interior. It's got crystal in there. Wowza! I'm hoping that we might get a chance, I might get a chance, to talk to some of these designers individually and get some more details about these extraordinary cars, because car design is fundamental to whether you like it or not, and whether it works or not. And these young people here are all tasked with bringing new ideas to a motor industry that needs fresh inspiration. Otherwise, everything's going to look the same, and you don't want that, do you? Just a quick reminder that tickets are now on sale for our big 20-year anniversary party gig and recording of an episode of the show involving you. Tickets are available now. Get them from Eventbrite. It happens on July the 19th at the Motorsport Lounge in San Didno. There's a link to the Eventbrite ticket page on the page for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, which you'll find at garethjones.tv. You know what Fred Ponting used to say? Book early. It's going to be amazing. See you there. Now, back to Munich. Arguably the most striking car here at the
thank you.
The car design event is the Hyundai Obsidian. And Dominic Anders, this is yours, right?
I'm a transportation design student at the University of Applied Science in Munich, and I'm the designer of the car, but I didn't do it myself. So I designed the car by myself, but the whole colleagues, so my transportation design students, helped me to build the car. And it is a sponsored project by Hyundai. And we built the car at DMS. They are a company who builds design models. And this is the final result. And I'm very happy to present it here at the car design event.
It's wonderful. It looks like a matchbox concept car from the 1970s, or the early 80s. You know, there's an angularity to it. Is that a trademark of yours? Edgy design rather than compound curves, organic designs? I mean, it's essentially just a wedge.
Yeah, the intention of this project was really to do something which is futuristic, but also retrofuturistic. Yeah. So I want the owner to remember his old feelings from the past, so nostalgic feelings, and bring them in a positive way into the future. And this should represent it here with this retrofuturistic design.
You've achieved that, because my reaction to it was something that is from my retroactive part of my life, Matchbox, which was futuristic. Were you given carte blanche to do whatever you want? Were you told do whatever, or were you given a very narrow brief?
We got a brief by Eduardo Ramirez, and the brief was...
He's head of design at Hyundai, yeah?
Yes. And he gave us a very open brief. The brief was about the next futuristic experience for the next Hyundai driver, and the rest of the brief was very open for us. So the students had all possibilities. They could imagine every car they wanted to. So you are not limited to a specific car category. You could do an SUV, you could do a sedan, you can do a sports car. And the only thing what for them was very important, that we integrate the whole AI into the creative process. That was really important for them, yes.
How did you do that? Had you used it as a tool to develop existing ideas, or you asked it questions, or used it in creating imagery? How do you do it?
The whole AI was integrated after the initial ideas. So we first started with sketches, and then we used Viscom as AI tool to develop the sketches and to get the first rendering proposals. And they were very inspiring and came up with new design solutions. And that's what
this is what you get.
Yeah. But the end result was done with the traditional tools, like building the model and stuff like that. Yeah,
it speaks minimalism is the wrong word, but it's a very simple car. It's a wedge shape. It's not over designed. Is that one of your trademarks?
Definitely. So maybe purity would be the better word.
Yeah.
The goal was a really reduced, clean design language that eliminates the unnecessary and blends a retrofuturistic flair with sharp contemporary edges. So everything what could be left out should be left out. So you don't want to overstyle a car and really focus on the important things. For example, the pixel lights. This signature is really in line with Hyundai Ioniq series.
Indeed, the Ioniq 5 has all that. Yeah.
Exactly. And it should be recognized as one of those cars as well.
So Hyundai are in the process of defining their design and style language still, aren't they? You know, what is a Hyundai? And you're one of the people actually creating that. That's a huge responsibility. How do you feel? I know you're contributing to their language rather than their actual cars.
I feel very honored, really, to win at this semester and got the full-size model. It is very special for us because it's the first full-size model for the transportation design in Munich, so for the University of Applied Science. I'm just honored. I'm happy to present it. A dream come true, really.
That's wonderful to hear. Yeah, one day my dreams will come true too, Dominic. Dominic, lovely to meet you,
Thank
man.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
I love it. And the fact that it's black, because it's called Obsidian, it's got to
Obsidian,
be black.
As a very strong volcanic glass that perfectly reflects this glossy and powerful aesthetic of this car. That was the idea behind the name.
I'd drive that. It's a car of the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you.
Gareth Jones on speed.
I've just enjoyed an extraordinary panel with some of the most important designers in the motor industry, some of whom are with me right now. Phil from GM, Dominic, Where are we at in terms of car design at the moment? Is this a tipping point where the demands on designers is greater than ever because the differentiation between EVs and internal combustion engine cars? So.
Maybe I've been in the industry a little bit too long, but we've always, as car designers, had some challenge that we've always addressed. If it was manufacturing, it was design to cost. Now we're designing EVs, ICE motors. Design is solving a problem. This just happens to be the latest problem that's really in front of us. And as car designers, we'll just kind of adapt to that. And the solutions that we'll come up with will be creative. We still need to drive excitement, drive customer demand. That's really at heart of what the job is. So it's just a different challenge.
Is excitement... Sorry, Dom.
I just need to add to that. I mean, I genuinely don't think there's been a better time to be a car designer. We're at a massive period of change, as Phil said, that we've experienced that a lot through our careers. But this is in the infancy of technology, in terms of battery technology, in terms of artificial intelligence. And I think, you know, there's a great opportunity to think of new ideas here and new thinking. And I think it's never been a better time to be in this industry. There's so many opportunities ahead, definitely.
How do you bring excitement to a well-known, traditional, well-defined brand like Corvette?
Corvette, we're always looking what's new. It's always been, we don't necessarily evolve Corvette. We do a little bit more of a radical change with each generation that we go to. So the opportunity that we had now with bringing in the UK studio, new, bright ideas, different ideas, they took, made a proposal on what that car should be. We have a proposal in Warren on what the car should be and a proposal in California. So with GM, we're always looking for what's the latest, what's the next greatest, the best. And it's just the internal competition that keeps us all fresh.
Yeah, Corvette is the longest standing sports car nameplate, even longer than Porsche 911. And we were very inspired by that. And we wanted to, you know, play with the sort of a bit of that rich heritage, timeless American design as well, in terms of those principles. And we wanted to produce something really special that embodied those values. So we had great fun doing it. And it was great. Phil was welcoming our new perspective. We're bringing this very European perspective to these brands to give them even more global relevance and desirability.
That was my final question.
Okay.
Is it a deliberate attempt to make the Corvette more appealing to Europeans by employing a Brit like you to come up with new ideas? It's called the E-Ray, yeah. The Corvette E-Ray.
That's the production car that Phil presented. That's the latest Corvette you can actually buy, an awesome exotic vehicle. And we've just done this purely design study that looks at what Corvette could be like, or our view of a Corvette concept, unfiltered. You know, it's a hypercar to express the design languages in the most dramatic way possible.
Drama. I'm hearing drama and excitement repeatedly from you guys. That's a Corvette, isn't it, Phil?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's a two-seat personal... I mean, it's a sports car. It's an enthusiast car. It's ultimate performance and an affordable price, attainable, is really what Corvette is.
Yeah. Blue-collar supercar, right?
Well, it's beyond that. It is well beyond that. It challenges, it beats cars that are four times its cost. But we're very proud of it. It's very exotic looking, especially going to the mid-engine configuration. So again, it will always have that American persona, but we just want to make sure that we really squeeze the most contemporary-looking Corvette that we can.
And hey,
it's a different perspective.
As a man who goes to the Le Mans 24 hours every year, you don't have to tell me about Corvette and excitement. We are so happy you're there. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Really appreciate the time and love the panel.
Thank you.
That's just a taster for what's to come on Gareth Jones on Speed, because that's it for this episode. But my trip to Munich continues in the next episode, where I get access to Laurent Boulet from Kia, Melissa Grustart from Genesis Europe, Lorenzo Ogelli from Volkswagen, Mattia Gessi from Pagani, and Tisha Johnson from Slate, amongst other people. Fascinating, detailed conversations with the very people who are steering automotive design. Don't miss it. That's the next episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, available 7 days from today. So that's the 15th of May. And don't forget, get your tickets for 20 years on Speed now, before they sell out. See you in a week. Bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share, and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!